This is the last session. And how many of you here for the whole sessions? Hey. All right. Give them both. All right. Give them a big hand. Now you remember everything, right? Okay, how many of you came to the first sessions? Raise your hands. Okay, now, that's good. You know, at the first session, you know, I didn't answer too much, right? You know, it's kind of a tough, you know, without any foundation, you know, to talk, you know. So today, you know, we can talk more, you know, about the question, you know, like, you know, what is world religion, you know, compared with, you know, folk religion, let's say. World religion is what? It's more of institutionalized, you know. There is a founder, you know, there is an organization, you know, so to speak, you know. World religions and more historically credible, you know, and more people believe. How many Christians, how many percent Christians in the world? Remember? We read, you know, the piece of the table talk.
20%, was it?
30%, yes. 30%, yeah. Only 30. So 70% are still non-Christians. So what are we called for as Christians? Yeah, go. You know, you are sent, you know, by the Great Commission. But, you know, the problem is, you know, sometimes, you know, we thought, you know, the Great Commission is the most important thing. But what is more important? The Great Commandment. I always think, you know, without the Great Commandment, you know, the Great Commission just won't work. What is the Great Commandment?
Love God with all your soul, with all your mind, and your spirit.
Okay, and then love your neighbors as yourselves. All right, now, without that, I don't think the Great Commission will work.
That's true. You gotta love somebody.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So, you know, it's very important that we're hanging on to that, and then we can go out. Without that, you know, you can't. And some people just, you know, some missionary in the, like, late, you know, 20th century, you know, going out, you know, preach the gospel, but without hearts, you know? I don't think that's right, you know, for the people. All right, now, what is religion? Definition. We, at the end of the first session, we talk about it. How many of you came to the first session again? All right. What is the religion? Okay, element.
Worship.
Is worship, okay, gathering, worship. It doesn't have to be gathering, right? It doesn't have to be, you know, assembly. Because for the Hindus and Buddhists, you know, what they do is, you know, they worship at home. Yeah, in the shrine. So worship. Okay, then what else? Worship to what? God, okay. You know, why do you worship? Because you have faith, yeah. And then why do you have faith for?
For the afterlife.
For? Eternity, or for salvation. Now, the problem, salvation, two A's,
V-A-T-I-O-N,
yeah, that's right, salvation. And, you know, what else? Faith,
love.
Salvation, pardon me?
Love,
okay. All right.
Well, they all have their sacred books.
Sacred book, yeah, that's very important. Yeah, sacred book. Whatever book that is, all right? Uh-huh.
Morals.
Pardon me? Moral, all right. You know, I will put this in different color. Morality.
Liturgy, okay.
Well, it's right here. Worship, right? Mm-hmm.
Structure.
Yes, institution. Uh-huh. Okay. Now, we'll stop right here. Now, my question for you then, you know, I put a different color here. Because institution. Do you know why I put this right there alone? Uh,
All right?
Is that what we all share?
That's the commonality we don't all.
Commonality of all religions? Commonality of all religions? Okay. Now, if we look at Christianity, this is more important than this, right? Is it? Because this is a result of this, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay? But for other religions, what happened?
The other way around.
The other way around. You know, you have to have this.
Yeah.
Sure, Judaism.
Okay? So if this is a definition of religion, common definition of religion, then is Christianity a religion? Give you a big question here.
We've always heard it's a relationship.
We are talking about more of a relationship rather than the morality. You see, remember this, you know, this chart here, like this here, God is right there, right? And we people right there, right? What happened is, you know, everybody is looking for pleasing God by doing good so that they can be saved. But we are different. We are like this, right? Jesus come and saves. So, are you going to classify, you know, Christianity as one of those religions or not? And then some people ask me afterwards and say, well, is it necessary to have Jesus? Yeah. If we are the same as them, then you know we don't need Jesus.
No.
Okay, now the question is, who is come to our neighbors?
Who has come to our neighborhood?
Who are coming to our neighborhood?
People from all over the world.
From all over the world. All right. Who are they? You know, we've been studying about them. You know, the belief system. Because when you know one person's belief system, and you know them very well, like I know some of you here are not Lutherans, right? I know one, at least. Yeah. Some of you are not Lutherans, I know. Yeah. Okay, now, you know, I know, you know, Presbyterian pretty well, so I know how to approach Presbyterian people. You know, I know because I was raised one, right? Yeah, I was converted. Now I'm a Lutheran pastor. I know how to act and interact with Lutherans easier because I know your belief system. Isn't it though?
Sure.
Okay, now so is it for that reason I can bash Lutherans too, right?
Right.
That's what exactly I'm going to do today. Okay. And really, you know, the problem that we have as a Lutherans is that, you know, we 10 years ago, you know, when I was in the constitutional convention in Ohio. And we set a goal of 10% of people of color in 10 years. Did we reach the goal? No. Matter of fact, you know, we slide down a little bit. It was, you know, when we combined, you know, we had 2.7%, and now we have 2.45, something like that. Yeah? And I was one of the strategists, you know, you can blame me on that. But, you know, let me tell you what, you know, I told those people who were sitting on the table with me, I said, you know, this won't work. I told them, I said, you know, this won't work because it's top down. There's no grassroots methodology, you know, to be provided for the congregations to get hold on and to spread the gospel in the grassroots level. you know, sometimes top-down thing is only on the paper, and then who is the gatekeeper? Sorry, pastors. Mm-hmm. You are the gatekeepers. Mm-hmm. You know, the message from national church just stuck right there on your desk. And then the grassroots, you know, even the church council sometimes do not know what's coming from the church, you know? And that's the problem of our system. So we have to create more what we call the methodology, you know, for evangelizing for people. And then in order to have that methodology, you have to know your neighbors, isn't there? Okay, now if you look at here, in this first page, you know, the thin one, okay? It's called ethnicitis. What does that mean? Ethnic, what is ethnic? Means people of diverse people, okay? And then chitis, what's chitis?
Illness.
What does that mean? All right, now, the virus is not the people of colors, okay, or other people. The virus is sin, okay? We have to be careful on that. All right, now, what is it then? If you're looking at your church, you know, I don't know where you are from, but you don't have to tell me, you know, say, you know, you're from Spokane or you're from, don't tell me that, but just tell me 10 years ago, what is your attendance on Sunday and what is it today? Okay, anybody want to share just a little bit? Let me point it. All right. What was your attendance 10 years ago at the...
Attendance of people of color or...
No, attendance at your church.
Oh.
What was it like?
It's about 800.
800.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 800. It was about 300.
300. What about today?
A little less than that.
A little less than that. Okay.
No, so we have 350. We have more people now.
More people? Oh, that is a healthy one. Okay. All right. Any church would like to, you know, you don't have to tell me your church name, but just tell me. 10 years ago. Less? 10 years ago was what?
Oh, I don't know.
You don't know the figure? Okay. How many of you know the figure 10 years ago of your church? Yes, please.
Washington, D.C. was 98
years ago, and now 75. That is pretty, percentage-wise, you know, it's pretty huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, percentage-wise. Number was not that significant, but it's huge in percentage. Okay, how about, you know, anybody here would like to risk? Okay.
I'm new to the congregation that I attend, mm-hmm. but in looking at the stats, they were an older congregation.
Yes.
10 years ago.
Yes.
And now they have young families coming.
That's good. So it's increasing.
Which is good.
You know, not too many Lutheran churches are that way because you know, a lot of Lutheran churches, you know, the membership is like this. You know, big, you know, a number. On the 70 years old, 80 years old, and then, you know, 60 years old maybe. And then when you go down to, you know, 50 years old, it's go down like this. And then when you have, you know, X generation, you know, it's going like this, you know. That's the fact, you know, of our church. And we lost, you know, two generations, Xers and the boomers. We lost them, all right? Now, what happened is that, you know, we don't redream, we don't re-see our vision. You know, we just maintain, you know, what it is now, and we are satisfied with it. You know, when you're satisfied with it, and then you have problem, you see? So let's look at this here. You know, if you turn to next page, you know, you will see this chart here. Usually when a church come about, there's a dreamer, there's a visionary. Okay, there's a dreamer and visionary. What he or she do was that, you know, to kind of cast out the vision, you know, to the people around him. Or maybe he's a developer, whatever, or, you know, a lay person and say, hey, we need a church here. So let's organize one church, you know. So however they do it, you know, they have dream, okay? And then what they do is, you know, they throw at people and say, hey, do you believe this, you know? Come and join us. So a group of people jump together and set some, what, goals. And then you have structure, all right? And then the ministry is going. And then if you do not do this, let's see. Let me put this line here, okay? Let's say, you know, the second or third year, if you don't dream again from this line and on. All right? Usually, you would end up here plateauing, and then the next year or two, and then you go sliding like this. All right? Especially church in the changing community. How many of your churches are in the changing communities? Raise your hands. Yeah. All right? Yeah. Maybe all of you have, you don't notice it. And you know, it's very important to read the next census, you know? Censorship. It's very, very important. And see, and to find out, you know, what is in your city or in your town. It's very important because there are a lot of hidden people. You don't know them. And you thought, you know, they are non-existent, but, you know, they are there. Instead of, for instance, you know, Ukrainians or Russians, can you tell, you know, from appearances? They are all white, right, in your town. But they are what? They are foreigners in your midst, okay? All right, now, so this is it, you know, it's very important. And then what happened is, you know, if you have other people in your community, you need to know who they are. You know, the first question being asked here in this paper, right, at the Megapitis, you know, say, in order to stop this kind of disease, first question should be asked is, whom are the new neighbors moving into our neighborhood, all right? And second question is, what are the needs of these new people? So who are they is very important. What their belief system, you need to know. You know, if you have a lot of Muslims in your neighborhood, you know, you better know who they are, okay? And number three is, you know, how can we as Christ Church, you know, help to meet the needs of these people? And this is why, you know, I say to dream again all the time is very, very important. Every 2-3 years, you have to dream again and to reset goals. You know, reset goals for your ministry. Although it kind of sounds like, you know, pretty complicated, but it is not, really. You know, just grasp, you know, one point that you think is very important for growing your church, I just say. And that's what that is, okay? Now, if you look at this chart here, I put the name of each category here, okay? Now, dream is visionaries, right? And belief is, you know, theologians. And then goal setting is, you know, directors. All right? And the structure, you know, those are belonging to, you know, organizers. And activists. You know, how many of your congregation has, you know, 20 and 80 scenarios? 20 are very, very active. And then, you know, you have 80 just coming on Sunday in 1 hour and they zoom off, you know, and that's it. How many of your church has that?
Oh, sure.
All right. Majority of your church. Okay, now, the problem that there is that, you know, those 80%, sometimes, you know, will slide from the back door of your church, you know, very, very quickly. Meaning, you know, they come no more. Maybe you know, come once a month and come once for 6 months and come for Christmas, you know, and that's about it, you know. But, you know, they stay on your roll, you know.
Sure.
That kind of thing. A lot of churches like that. So, you know, it's very important that, you know, we know how to get those 80% to be active. And there is a methodology I'm going to tell you later. Okay, now, another thing is, you know, if you're going down the hill like this, you have, you know, nostalgia people, you know, say, oh, 3 years ago we have, what, 200 people worshiping, now we are down to 100. You see that? You know, they will complain to the pastors and say, what's going on? You know? All right? Those are traditionalists, you know, because they have been church, they've been in the church, you know, for a long time. Okay? How about questioning? You know, we pastors, you know, are scared of these people. Questioning you. Pastor, I have some concerns. You know, I have some concerns, you know. Yeah, and that kind of thing, you know, a lot in our congregations. Polarizations. Do you have fighters in your congregations? Yeah. Well, and then dropped out. All right, now, let me draw a line here, okay? If you're church members, if you're a pastor, you have to know this. How many of your church members belongs to this portion? How many of your church members belong to that portion? It's very important to know this. Because every time you come out, you know, you're at the door, you know, greet the people, right? When they get out, you know, you know where they are at immediately. Shake their hands. You know, this guy is traditionalist. This guy is the activist. This guy is, you know, whatever, you know, dreamers, you know, visionary. You will know. And then, when you know who they are, then you can place them in whatever position or where is needed. That's very important. And the more people from this end, that means your church is very healthy. Okay? The more people from this end, that means, you know, you need to work on something. Yeah? Okay? So just, you know, this is very helpful to me, you know, to go out and to know, you know, who they are out there. Or in your church, okay? Now, so if you have so many people in this on this side, what needs to be changed? Let's read, you know, Acts 10. Of course, you know, we don't have time, you know, to read it through, but let's see, have about 35 minutes. Okay, now, chapter 10 of Acts. At Caesarea, there was a man named Cornelius, a centurion of what was known as Italian cohort, a devout man who feared God with all his household, gave alms liberally to the people, and prayed constantly to God. About the ninth hour of the day, he saw clearly in the vision an angel of God coming in and saying to him, Cornelius, and he stared at him in terror and said, what is it, Lord? And he said to him, your prayers and your alms have ascended as a memorial before God. And now send men to Joppa and bring one Simon, who is called Peter. He is lodging with Simon a tanner, whose house is by the seaside. When the angel who spoke to him had departed, he called two of his servants and a devout soldiers from among those that waited on him. And having related everything to them, he sent them to Joppa. All right, who is Cornelius? He's a soldier. He is a really. He's a Gentile, isn't it? Gentile in where?
Middle.
Oh yeah, but you know where is he now? In Israel, okay? Yeah, in Israel. All right. Okay. Now, what happened is, you know, this is a foreigner in Israel. All right. Now, just think of this. How many Cornelius that you have in your neighbors? And are Cornelius Cornelius's religious? This is a question for you. You know, according to this, Cornelius is very
religious.
Yeah? And we have neighbors coming from Buddhist tradition, coming from Muslim tradition or Islam tradition, coming from Hindu tradition. They are very religious. So how did Paul treat them? Do you remember in chapter 17 that we read in the first session? Paul put these people in the same, on the same ground as we have. You know, worship the God that we worship, but they don't know the name, you see? That's what we need to do. And so, do we need to tell them about Jesus? That is in question. After being studying, you know, 5 sessions, hopefully you know that, you know, it's necessary to tell them about Jesus because Jesus saves. All right? The others, you know, is, you know, coming from yourself. Like, for instance, you know, you can become Buddha. All right? Now, if you become Buddha, can you sell yourself? You see, that's the problem, you see. You know, you believe that, you know, that Buddhism is good. Yes, it's good. Because they are so moral. And they are very religious. And even more religious than we. But what lacking is, you know, they tried very hard to reach God, but they can't. This is why we need to tell them that Jesus is much easier. Have Jesus to meet them where they are. Now, this is exactly what Peter did, but with some efforts. If you read on, you know, this chapter is very interesting. Now, we don't have to read it on, you know. You know what happened later, Peter. What happened was, you know, Peter was sitting there, you know, hungry, you know, at the noon hour. What happened was this, you know, the blanket came down. How many times? 3 times before. 3 times. I think, you know, he's as stubborn as the Lutherans. Remember, you know, the second chapter, what happened there was that, you know, the Pentecost, you know, he was the one who stood on the marketplace, and what happened? He preached the best sermon in the whole world. And what happened was that 3,000 were saved. And now what happened here was that, you know, the Lord has to come down 3 times so that he would get it. So whose conversion is this, you know, chapter 10, really?
Peter's
conversion. Now, reflect on ourselves. How many Peters in our midst need to be converted? And this is a good question, you know, to many, many mainland denominations, including, you know, our Anglican brothers and sisters. Yeah? You know, we need to convert ourselves in order to accommodate people. Like I say, at the very beginning, the great commandment is what? Preceded the Great Commission. Without that, you know, nothing works. You see, Peter, you know, what God has cleansed, you must not call common or unclean, the Lord said to him. And then again, you know, when these 2 different kind of people met, and do you know what Peter said to Cornelius' household? Let me read to you, okay? Peter said to them, you yourself, on verse 28, by the way, you yourself know how unlawful it is for a Jew to associate with or to visit anyone of another nation. My question for you is, you know, is Peter still a Jew or a Christian? Okay? Now, you know, Jesus was nailed on the cross already. Remember that, okay? And then, but God has shown me that I should not call any man common or unclean. So when I was sent for, I came without objection. I'm twisting here, right? And I asked them, why you sent for me? Now, the interesting thing on this chart here is that, you know, if we have a lot of people like this here, conversion is what is necessary. So how are we going to do that is, you know, another thing. You know, first thing first, you know, the pastor of the church has to be converted first. If he is not convinced, I don't think, you know, anything can work. Because he's the lead, you know, of the church. And then if you are in a changing community, if we don't change in ourselves, I don't think anything can happen. All right? Now, if that is the case, then if you take this out, you know, we'll see this. How many people knows, you know, monocultural?
Monocultural.
Monocultural is a single culture, right? You know, it's they say, you know, the United States, you know, from 9 to 12 o'clock, you know, is the most segregated hours in the United States. It is because, you know, there are white church, there are, you know, black church, there are, you know, Asian church, there's Chinese church, there's, you know, a whatever church. And then, you know, when the weekday comes, you know, from Monday through Friday, you know, all people come into one school, you know, one working place, Boeing Field, you know. You know, if you go to, you know, Microsoft, you know, if you go to Microsoft, you know, you see all these people, you know, from all over the world, you know. And but only Sundays, you know, we separate ourselves as Christians. You know, we become monocultural church. And what is a cross-cultural? Cross-cultural usually is, you know, from one culture cross to another. Usually that is a missionary work, you know. You go to another church, another country, and you come back after your missionary work is done. Never been done, but, you know, so to speak, for you. And then you come back. Or, you know, a college students go out, you know, to study in Tanzania, let's say, and then you come back. That's cross-cultural. And what is that? Multicultural. Everybody together, right? All sorts of cultures come together in one place. And then, let me tell you what, you know, American is a multicultural country. It is not going to be changed. You know, all those people who came to this country won't go away. You know, no matter how you tell them, go home, they won't. Okay? They are here to stay. So, as church, how are we going to respond to these people? You know, we have to ask ourselves, you know, how many of your neighbors are from, you know, outside of countries? You know, you can ask yourself. And then these are hard questions, you know, really. You know, I know it's pretty hard, but it's the reality. You know, we have to face it. And we have a more of an interracial marriage today than, you know, the last 50 years. A lot of interracial marriage, you know. Where are they going to go? You know, it's very, very important that we know that. And then we have a blind spots, you know. I don't want to go through that, but, you know, just read through it. You know, we minimize our cultural differences. Like I said, you know, they have to be like us so that they can do our church. The conformity is not unity. What is the unity? You keep your own identity, or else, you know, without diversity, I don't think unity can happen. You see, you have to keep your own identity. So this is why I said, you know, if we know the Buddhists, if we know the Hindus, if we know them, their belief system, and it will be easier for us to, you know, to approach them and where they are at. You know, I think that's very, very important. This is what Jesus did, you know, at the woman at the well. Do you remember that? Woman at the well in the, John 4. Jesus comes and says, give me a drink. He didn't come and say, hey, I am Jesus. No, give me a drink. Serve me, or something like that. All right. Okay, now, blind spot number two. What is it? It depends. No. Number two is we don't understand our audience. Again, you know, we have to know people's belief system in order to let them know them. Blind spot number three, we view evangelism as an event, like, you know, Billy Graham. You know, this big, you know, evangelical events. What is evangelism, by the way?
Spread the word.
Spread the words. How? By just telling them?
No.
No.
By
word and actions. That's so important. You know, James says, you know, without actions, you know, the word is dead. And Luther didn't like it. But it's in the Bible, he can get away from it. You know, so. And then blind spot number four is depend on me. No, no, no. It is not depend on you. Any conversion happens, it's not you. You are only the instrument. Remember this, you know, woman at the well. You know, when she said, you know, hey, come and meet this person, you know, can this be Christ, you know? She was not sure. And then later on, you know, these people said, you know, hey, no more you, but we her, you know, ourselves. So this woman become an instrument. All right, so important, you know, we do not have credit. Sorry, this is the Holy Spirit's work, okay? All right, next. And we have a narrow view of evangelism. You know, this sometimes, you know, don'ts and do's and stuff like that, you know, here you can take a look at it. This is, you know, the reflection on the John 4, okay? And then here, page 6 through page, this is an article, you know, this article is, you know, excerpted from my thesis. My thesis is called, you know, the diversity in the unity in the midst of diversity through the Holy Communion. Yeah, that's it. And it's very, very interesting, you know, to see, to read through it, you know, and sometimes. I identified, you know, two different kind of churches, you know, which are, you know, ethnicitis. You know, has this disease of ethnicitis. One is, you know, island church. One is the ghetto church. What is the island church? Island church is a church which is surrounded by the ethnic church, ethnic people, and then but in the church all white, you know, worshiping. And then their age is about, you know, 70 years old. Yeah, we have a lot of those churches, tell you the truth. Especially in the cities, okay? That's what I call island church. And what is a ghetto church? Ghetto church are the ethnic people who come together every Sunday without any association with the community. Again, they come from far, you know? And gathering together, you know, like Taiwanese, you know, or Chinese, or Hong Kongians, and Cantonese, and, you know, they come together. And the problem with the ghetto church is that, you know, how about the second and third generation, or how are they going to deal with those kids? And that is in question. And sometimes ghetto church can survive only 20 years, one generation, that's about it. You know, we spent a lot of money in establishing ghetto churches, DO as a division of outreach. And but end result of that is that, you know, the church is no more. Because, you know, they serve only the first generation immigrants, and that's just about it. You know, spend $250,000, you know, 10 years, and end result of it is nothing. Okay? That was my concern. So that's why I wrote that thesis. You know, I said, let's get together. Come on, Christians. You know, we can be together. I think, you know, secular world can be together. We can too. All right? Okay, now let's do this. What time? Oh, 15 minutes. This is good. Any questions so far? Yes?
Okay, well, first of all, I have to say that sounds great and everything, but I feel like I'm going to raise an issue that won't be looked upon very favorably in these times, which is that you note that during the week and secularly, sure, we live in a multicultural community, especially here in America, and I see that in my high school classroom.
Sure. Right.
But my question becomes, what makes the Korean Lutheran church down the street
flourishing? Yeah.
Flourishing, doing great things. My kids could go there. Sure. And what makes that something that does not seem to it's not multicultural by this definition, and we're saying, well, why can't we get together? And I think that it's this fine, wonderful, nice little idealistic goal that we have. However, people are resistant to change, and people are resistant to go out and find these types of relationships with people of other cultures who are different from them. Yeah. And because the church is flourishing, what makes that Korean Lutheran church, I don't want to use the word bad, but what what makes this, it's just, I don't know, do you see where I'm going?
I know.
Yeah.
You know, before you even talk about it, you know, I know you were talking about this already.
Because you know, you're talking about each
homogeneous unit principle. HUDP. This is a principle, you know, which is applied to what we call, you know, the a church will be flourishing without, or you know, let me retract that. People would like to become Christians without cross the barriers of language.
That's correct.
Class.
It's easier.
And race.
It's easier. Why make it such a hard thing? Because people want religion to be easy.
My question for you then, what is our mother church in the first? What is our mother church in the first century?
Our mother church?
Our mother church in the first century.
Multicultural.
The little poem, the churches.
If you read, you know, chapter 2 of Acts, how many languages were heard? You know, I counted about 17, but you know, one is Asian. How many are Asian languages? And everybody heard their tongues. You see? You know, I don't oppose that, this homogeneous unit principle. I don't, really. But how are we going to utilize this, and at the same time, we can be together?
Well, it's an important question. I mean, because you want to make the argument that as the Christian church, you are a one Christian church, right? You're one body.
I appreciate that. You know, this is coming.
Yeah.
The next page, you know, is what we exactly to resolve that question, all right? Thank you for asking that. You know, it's very essential because, you know, homogeneous unit principle is being utilized, you know, by many urban churches and suburban churches, I should say. All these big mega churches, you know, it's applying this kind of principle. But, you know, my question to them is that, is this really, you know, God wants us to be? That would be my question. You know, whether it's work well or not, I don't know. And maybe, you know, the devil's advocate, you know, I don't know. But, you know, questions has to be raised. Is this really a church that we want to belong? You see, are they really Christian? You know, that is in question, you see. Oh, well, especially you are in the urban area. That would be my question, okay? Now, the next, you know, is that, you know, this is a church model. Not model per se, but, you know, I think, you know, which might be able to work. I used it, you know, once before, it works. But I hope that, you know, if you take this home, if bring these people to get in touch with these people through English second language. And you can create, you know, small group of all these, you know, small, you know, ethnic people. And what happened here is that, you know, my concern is really not here. My concern is the second and third generation of people. Do you remember, you know, why all these, you know, ethnic congregation died after 20 years? That's because, you know, their second generation won't be part of that church anymore. Like my son. My son, you know, just graduated from UW in the drama, okay? He's doing very well with the Taproot Theater. I don't know how many of you, yes, of you know Taproot Theater. Okay, yes. Now, he's an actor at Taproot Theater. If you say, you know, Sam, come to Taiwanese worship, mm-hmm, he will kill him. You see, that's the second generation, right? And this is what I found, you know. And if we don't do something for our second and third generation, you know, those church here would die. And if you see this, you know, this is under one administration, one senior pastor, and then he will do, you know, finance, you know, administration in the finances, in all other aspects, you know, of the ministry within this,
under this roof. I think, yes, what you're observing is a part of our society which although the census will show that we're becoming more multicultural, yes, in number, yeah, we're still very much a white male oriented,
oh, it is,
society. And, yeah, and I think the second and third generation show that the value in order to get ahead is in the white male world, and therefore they don't want to go. And this is where we're losing. And then what I really like about the model, mm-hmm, that you set up is that what this values is the Christ-centered approach, that we can't really discount the power of that message with Jesus at the center, that can bring things together. But I also see that there can be backlash from people saying, well, why do you want me to become more white and learn English and things like that? You're bringing me to that side, and there can be some resentment there. You know,
yeah.
Although I love doing ESL ministry, it's,
yes,
like the coolest thing in the world.
Yes, it is.
But there can be that there.
But you know, let me tell you what, you know, under this roof, you know, there are quite a few people on this line. You cannot force anyone, you know, from here to here or to here. You can't. You just can't. So we will allow them still be our members, no matter where they are at. You see what I'm saying? This is very inclusive. Meaning, you know, if you are a pastor, if you have a church member just hanging out with, you know, red book, you know, red hymnal,
that's right,
you still have to love them. Don't you think? Yeah, I minister to, you know, a couple of those. You know, the green hymnal just no good. You know, never be good. You know, green hymnal. So what do you do? You still have to love them. You still have to go to hospital to see them. You see? And then, you know, the same thing here. The same thing here. Okay, if you don't know, you know, Chinese, let's say, you know, bring a person with you who can, all right? So this is kind of a scenario. Yes, make some efforts. You know, that's what we're supposed to do, you know, as the, you know, model, you know, Christ. You know, we're little Christs, you know? That's what we're supposed to do. You know, I like your comments, really, you know. ESL is really a neat program. At the Christ and the Trinity Lutheran Church, you know, where I served for 7 years, we used to have about 50 people, you know, come up and do this kind of ministry and serve about 300 people. Mm-hmm. 300 people, just think about that. Mm-hmm. 300 people, then their family, their friends, You know, every time they think of a Trinity Lutheran Church, they would think of, you know, Pastor Lai or, you know, Pastor Mace. And whenever they, although they are not Christian, they will call me for funerals. You see, that's what we are there for. You see?
Could you identify ESL for the non-Lutherans?
It's called English as a second language.
Oh, right.
I'm sorry.
In a religious context.
It is not ELCA. It is for everybody. Okay, we, you know, at the region one, we have developed, you know, a teaching method. And we have three teams, you know, to be sent to train our members. You know, if you say, you know, we have 20 people in our church, you know, would like to teach English second language, you know, call Peter Lai. You know, I was sent, you know, a team to come to your church and train with people. 6 hours training. That's it. All right, now, you know, we have 20 people, you know, came together, you know, using about, what, 3 months to develop this, all right? And we have a drama team, my son and my daughter-in-law. They both, you know, contribute their time and talent, you know, to do this kind of ministries. And for 30 minutes, they will tell you in the drama why we need to do this. It's very effective because we are, how do you call it? DCM, the Division of Congregational Ministry, Wybetta, you know, she granted us about $30,000 just to do this throughout the country. We went to, you know, Texas, we went to Washington, D.C., we went to, you know, matter of fact, today, you know, our team members are in Los Angeles for tomorrow's training, the whole day training at the Southern California West Senate church there, you know. So, you know, if you need the training, you know, just call up my office and we'll come for you, okay? All right, any other questions? So much for advertisement. Our time is up, but, you know, if you have questions, then you can stay. Thank you very much.